This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot going on today, and I'm going to try to get it all in. We're going to go out to Gaza. Ambassador Mike Huckabee's there with Steve Witkoff, and they're going to go see for themselves the humanitarian challenges in that region still run by Hamas. Problem is, they're a terrorist organization, and they're pressuring the democracy to acquiesce after they started this war in 2023. We'll talk to that. Marcus Lemonis is standing by, too. Brand new series out is now on Fox Business as well as Fox Nation. You love it. And he's going to be with us in a moment. It's called The Fixer. In fact, I just got off television talking to him. The jobs report is in. It looks as though we've added less than we thought. We were hoping to add 104,000. We added 73,000. And then we find out that these previous months were revised downward by 250,000. So jobs could be somewhat of an issue as we try to rebalance our trade economy. And we'll keep you up to date on that. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
For most of the media, this is not coverage. It would be a confession. That is, if they actually cover this story, they are confessing their own role.
Pay attention. Revelations about the Russia hoax are accelerating and going in the direction that all media outlets will find it soon impossible to ignore. Hillary Clinton, George Soros, front and center. We'll discuss.
Number two.
We started tariffs. We didn't know what they're going to be. And now we kind of know. And they're more moderate and thoughtful and, you know, more carefully done. And hopefully they'll help some companies export. Maybe some people move manufacturing back here. So, you know, so far, so good.
J.P. Morgan Chase, CEO, maybe the most respected businessman, banker in the country, talking trade deals. He says the deadline, we know it as yesterday, not just for Major League Baseball, but for DJT to realign all our trade relationships. Most of the bigger economies have come on in with a good deal. Canada and it sits on the outside. Mexico gets a extension, as does China.
Number one.
I always believed that as fragile as our democracy is, our systems would be strong enough to defend our most fundamental principles. And I think right now that they're not as strong as they need to be.
Wow, doesn't she get you fired up? The former vice president is back out there getting ready for her book tour. Biden and Harris are center stage, and Dems are forced to relive their epic fail. We bring you the latest as yet another member of Joe's inner circle pretends he was just fine and could have won the race if he stayed in, and Harris lays out her future. Let's talk about the economy. Marcus Lemonis, member of Him and the Prophet, unbelievably successful businessman, Camping World CEO, and host of The Fixer. Marcus, welcome back. It's been 7 minutes.
Good morning, Brian. It's been 7 minutes, but I have to tell you, after reading this jobs report, I don't know how much more frustrated people can be right now, to be honest with you.
So we're talking about 73,000 instead of 105,000.
Well, it's 73,000 today, but if we look back over the last couple of months, that number came roaring down. And as I said to you a few minutes ago, you have to wonder, doesn't the Fed get a preview to these types of data points? This is a really important data point. I think, are they waiting for a bunch of people to get fired, or are they waiting for companies to say, we're not doing anything until we see some sort of relief somewhere? That's what's frustrating to me.
You know what bothers me? You know, you're going to make the numbers. You're an economist. You're a Fed chair. I just hope it's not personal. I hope it's not saying I can't be perceived to be giving into pressure from the White House, so I'm not going to do it, because they had two officers say, I don't agree with leaving things unchanged.
Well, I think there's a balance, right? I think there is a balance of necessity for independence. And I don't think anybody disagrees with that on both sides of the House. I think the real challenge is that when you talk to business leaders that are really driving the economy, that are hiring people, that are borrowing money, that are spending money on CapEx, they will all tell you that they're in a wait and see mode. And the wait and see mode isn't about tariffs. We understand generally what that tariff scope is. We just heard Jamie Dimon talk about it. And so for most businesses, it's going to be slightly impactful and the absorption will happen. The benefit of interest rates being lower is that it frees up cash flow for a lot of companies, gives them the comfort that they can spend some money on hiring people, on growing. People aren't doing any of that right now.
So, so that you're not doing it. You're not letting people go and you're not hiring them, right?
I'm in this really weird zone. And so I look at the businesses that I have. I just, you know, we have Bed Bath & Beyond. We opened our first store yesterday and we're hiring people. I look at my Camping World business. My numbers are off the charts, but I'm in this really frozen zone where because interest rates affect my P&L so much, without that relief, I'm scared to buy stores, open stores, or hire people. And that's a big problem when you're 30% of the market.
And you're revitalizing Bed Bath & Beyond, right?
We are. So I took over Overstock. Many people may know of Overstock years ago. It's a company that has both a dot-com business and a blockchain business. And we bought Bed Bath & Beyond out of bankruptcy and we're bringing it back. We could be bringing it back, oddly, at the best possible time because I thought that the trough was behind us. What the Fed's doing is actually elongating that trough. And that's what's concerning.
Because concerning, you said. Okay.
Concerning. Very concerning.
Well, can I just ask you, Bed Bath & Beyond seems to be a staple of the American family. What was wrong with the business model?
Well, you look at the way the company operated before. They had billions and billions of dollars of debt, terrible inventory management, weren't really focusing on training their people, weren't really getting in and taking care of the customer and being smart about it. And most importantly, they started abandoning all the things with these big brands. Bed Bath & Beyond really went through what I would call one of those classic examples of being tone deaf to what was happening in the world. We have a fresh start. We have a debt-free company. We're opening up some stores and you know, we'll see what happens. But as I look at tariffs and I look at the labor market, it isn't a perfect science, but it could be a lot cleaner if we would just get a little bit of relief.
You know, if you talk to anyone in the Trump administration on the economic side, they're all about bringing manufacturing and business back here. You know, you make your car here, there's going to be no tariffs. Is that something that gratifies you?
Well, I think the thing for me in being in the RV business, all of our RVs are built here in America. So it's part of our DNA already. And so when I go to Elkhart, Indiana, and I see thousands of people working, that's obviously really satisfying. When I see things coming over from China, quality is poor, freight is expensive. You do have to ask yourself, you look at where furniture can be manufactured in Mississippi, where it can be manufactured in Alabama. And I think the Trump administration is thinking really, really, really intensely smart here about understanding, will companies start to make the seismic shift? Will land prices go up because factories are being built? Will labor market get better because factories are being built? That's ultimately what I think the Trump administration's goal is. I'm trying to figure out who's getting in the way.
Are you playing coy or do you know who's getting in the way besides the Fed who's disappointing you?
I think the Fed policy really is getting in. I mean, I could just be that blunt about it. You look at companies willing to spend CapEx dollars. Those CapEx dollars are going to service debt. Those CapEx dollars are going to service real-time, short-term and long-term interest rates. And a little bit of relief is meaningful. In my Camping World business alone, and this is a small number compared to some big companies, a 0.25% interest rate cut frees up $8 million of cash flow on an annual basis. $8 million to buy new stores, hire new people, invest in the markets, little teeny numbers. That's a small business, by the way. I'm a $7 billion business, not a $70 billion business.
Before we get into this week's episode and in the series, quick question to you personally, because you hang out a lot of people who take risks. You take risk. I'm going to try to get Bed Bath & Beyond back. You know, I'm going to see if these RV things are going to work. And if so, where do I open this up? And I'm going to have to hire people and I'm going to have to build a facility. I really feel like guys like you, and I know you don't do it for praise, don't get enough credit because, you're looking to make a profit and be successful, but you're not going to do it without people. And when you hire people, you help them earn a living. They raise families and they look because you took a risk. People's lives have changed. Do you think guys like you and women like you get enough respect in our economy these days?
I don't know that respect is what I'm looking for. I think what I'm looking for is the acknowledgement of how difficult it is to start an idea, to run a business, to take a chance, particularly in a consumer cyclical world. And what I feel like the Trump administration is doing more than maybe I even felt like he did the last time is focusing on how do we get businesses to take chances on people and how do we get them to take chances on investing? And the backdrop we have now is don't take risks. Wow. That's the backdrop.
Have you utilized AI to a great length yet?
Well, AI has become a necessity, but the one misnomer that I think has happened is that a lot of detractors from AI think that AI is a replacement of labor. It's an enhancement of labor. It makes things move faster. It makes things less expensive. It gives the customer the opportunity to buy things for less. If you balance AI and tariffs, Brian, to be candid with you, and you get efficiency out of your business, which allows you to lower your operating costs, then the tariffs can be slightly more absorbed. We know that that $150 billion that came in last month, that matters.
Hear you. All right. So on your series, The Fixer, which is streamed on Fox Nation and on FBN on Tuesdays, here is one episode, a cut from one of your episodes, Happy Gene versus Evil Gene, cut 50.
How long have you worked here?
25 years.
What? You've been with Gene for 25 years?
25 years.
I've been here 15 years.
So you guys like it here if you've been here that long?
It's okay sometimes. Sometimes there's just too much tension.
What drives that?
Who even came up with such a stupid idea? Where was the brain power to come up with that?
There's two genes, I always say. There's a happy gene, and there's an evil gene. You don't know what you're walking into.
So tell me about this business.
So, Brian, just as a reminder, that the show airs its premiere episodes on Fox Network on Friday nights.
Oh, okay.
And then a Fox News and Fox Nation will play the reruns of them over the next several weeks because we wanted to be all in the Fox family. This particular business is a microcosm, in my mind, of every business in America. People stay because they don't know what else to do, but that doesn't mean they're happy. And at the end of the day, even if you went into a great company like Home Depot or a great company like, you know, whatever it may be, General Motors, you're always going to find dissenting people. And that's what we find in these small businesses as well.
And you said this is a little different from your last series. You feel like I'd be a little bit tougher, more direct.
You know, what happened was I got candidly got taken advantage of a lot over the last decade in trying to help people out. And, you know, they get aggressive with you. In this particular case, particularly with the economy, I came in a lot hotter. As my friends and family will tell me, now I look like no bullshit, Marcus, excuse my French. I think before I was more concerned about how everybody felt and making them feel good. And what I say to them now is there is no time to make you feel good. Your business is either going to succeed or it's going to fail, and we're going to get right to it.
What is this business? What was this business?
This was an audio. For those of you that remember in the old days, you'd take your car and you'd go get new rims and you'd go get new speakers and an alarm. It's that kind of business, and they service dealerships. What I loved about it is it's driven by five mechanics. And I grew up in the car business. I grew up in the parts department. I was a service advisor, and I understand that manual labor in this country, you talked to me earlier about, do we not get enough credit as business leaders who take chances? The folks that aren't getting the credit are the folks that are making the cars, building the houses, paving the roads, fixing the cars, doing the plumbing and the electrical. The trade world, I think, is ultimately what Trump is trying to really revive here.
Interesting. And do you have a preview of this week's episode?
So this week's episode, there's two episodes on Fox Network tonight. There's a business, two businesses that I walk out of without even doing anything. It's probably the most frustrating episode of the series. And then there's another episode where I made an agreement to go to their business only to find out that they were closed when I got there.
Wow.
I didn't know that. So what I wanted to do on the show, Brian, is give a serious entrepreneurs a look inside the business. I'll tell you one quick story because I know we're limited on time. About 4 years ago, I got a phone call from a gentleman on the phone, and he said, I want to tell you that your show helps me and my company. It helps every business in America because you're teaching people how to be responsible, how to work for something, how to do a deal with a good old-fashioned handshake. The conversation went on for 5 minutes, and I ended up finding out that it was Jamie Dimon telling me that what we're doing for entrepreneurs is not being done enough. We're not putting enough focus on every big business starts as a small business. So that's exciting.
That is awesome. He's a great guy and so unbelievably successful. Marcus Lemonis, thanks so much. Look forward to checking out The Fixer. Everywhere you see Fox, you'll see Marcus. Thanks. All right. Brian Kilmeade Show, back with your calls in a moment. Ambassador Mike Huckabee from Israel just in 15 minutes. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I am joined by a great friend of mine, Democratic strategist and senior vice president at the Messina Group. His name is Ty Matzdorf.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
JD is here, our fantastic vice president, and Scott Bessent, and we're making a lot of deals. We're making deals for trillions, trillions and trillions. Nobody's ever seen anything quite like it. We just made a couple of others a little while ago.
President of the United States talking about the July 31st deadline today. It is, we're past it, not just for the trading deadline in Major League Baseball. Thank goodness the Mets and Yankees made some moves in my small world. But I do think that we have a lot of deals about to be queued up. It looks like Mexico got an extension. Part of the reason is they've been fantastic at the border, and it's explained to him agriculturally and with transportation. They're looking to do something bigger than the USMCA being renewed or anything like that. Canada, it's been personal, and they're getting 35% tariffs. They're upset. They want to take a stand. Well, good luck with that. A lot of people want to take a stand. Go and do a deal. Your obligation to your country is to do the best deal possible. We have to watch your back militarily. We lead the way with all our military alliances. And now when it comes to certain products, you probably have complaints on us. We got more complaints with you. So far, standing out, they didn't do a deal in Switzerland. They got 39% tariffs. South Africa, 30%. Israel, 15%. Taiwan, 20%. China is fascinating with China because that's the one I expected to be all the world against China. But the president had a different approach. It must have changed to a month and a half ago. And I know there's a story behind it. I'll try to get to it. And where they said that they were just going to get into deal mode and see if it's possible. And it turns out they have a partner on the other side that does seem to want to get something done. Here's the Treasury Secretary, Cut 18.
Ambassador Greer and myself will be speaking to President Trump today about whether we will be doing the roll by the August 12th deadline. There are still a few technical details to be worked out on the Chinese side between us. I'm confident that it will be done, but it's not 100% done.
So I saw Tristan Harris. He was on with us yesterday. We respect him in the Silicon Valley world and AI world. And he does not like the fact that we've given in and given China access to NVIDIA chips. That's NVIDIA said, look, they're going to make their own. They'll be able to catch up to us, and then soon we'll have no control of it. Why don't you do it now and exchange it for rare earth? China's ministry, this shocks me. You know, we've been doing this for a while. The anger between the two countries, administrations, has been epic. But not this time. So far, this is the quote from Chinese Ministry of Commerce. China looks forward to deepening dialogue and consultations with the United States to seek more mutually beneficial outcomes based on the consensus reached during the Stockholm talks. Both sides will continue to push for extending the suspension of 24% of the U.S. reciprocal traffic tariffs, along with China's corresponding countermeasures in an additional 90 days. Interesting. We'll see where it goes. I still know they're an adversary. We'd like to make them just a competitor. We've been fighting back and forth for this time. See if they could help us do something substantial. And that is to stop selling dual-use weapons and buying the oil of Russia. Ambassador Huckabee next.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I have an update from Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, who I got off the phone with this morning.
Special Envoy Witkoff and Ambassador Huckabee had a very productive meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu and other officials today in Israel on the topic of delivering much-needed food and aid to Gaza. President Trump is a humanitarian with a big heart, and that's why he sent Special Envoy Witkoff to the region in an effort to save lives and end this crisis.
Captain Leavitt yesterday on the need to see for themselves, and I think it's important because the world is willing to say, and just say, according to the Hamas Disinformation Bureau, they tell about 60,000 have lost their lives. I have no way to verify that, but they have no track record of being accurate. They've already revised it down a number of times. Number two, it seems no aid gets in because of the IDF. That we know that's not true. It's certainly not the mandate in the charter. So people are suffering, no doubt about it. But just remember who's to blame. It's Hamas who's to blame. Israel would have been perfectly fine with the Palestinian presence in the West Bank and Gaza. But it's been nothing but hellacious for the general population, culminating in October 7th and the unprovoked attack. Ambassador Mike Huckabee, fresh off a visit to Gaza with Steve Witkoff, has been kind enough to join us now from Israel. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be with you, and I'm so glad you're giving a forum to get the truth out about what's happening in Gaza and who's responsible, because most of the media is filled with some of the worst misinformation and, frankly, just outright lies. And it's very, very harmful, and it's only empowering Hamas and causing our hostages to be kept there longer.
Well, tell me what you saw. I mean, you just said, let me see for myself. You got your security. You went in there with Steve Witkoff. Where did you go? What did you see?
We went into the Rafah area down in the southern part. We were able to look into other parts, but here's what we saw. The GHF food program is working. It's working very well. In fact, today we passed over 100 million meals having been served in 2 months. We kept the president's direction to us when that was set up, and it was simple. Get food to the people, but don't deliver it in such a way that Hamas can steal it. Brian, Hamas has been stealing about 80% of the food. Some say even more than that. And when they steal it and they loot the trucks, then they turn around and they sell it. I'll give you an example. A simple 4-bag kilo of sugar is selling for over $200 in Gaza on the black market because Hamas has stolen most of the food and then they put it out on the black market. Well, people can't afford that. It's a simple thing. Most of the people coming up to the GHF feeding sites will say, wow, this is great. This is the first time I haven't had to pay for the food that's supposed to be humanitarian. It's been disgraceful, and I'm so tired of people saying that the IDF are just shooting people. That is simply not true. There are moments, there have been very difficult environments where maybe you have several thousand people rushing toward an outpost of IDF soldiers. They're first warned verbally, then they're fired a warning shot, and sometimes they keep coming. Sometimes there have been fatalities. But it is never just this random shooting. That's simply not happening. In fact, the IDF has worked very hard. They've offered to provide security to get UN trucks. One of the biggest problems in not getting people fed is the UN. It's been horrible. And they're more interested in pretending to be a humanitarian organization than they are in actually getting food to people who are hungry.
Ambassador, I'm sure you saw the reports over the weekend that Israel cannot prove that Hamas is reselling the provisions. Your thoughts on that? I'm sure you heard that.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've also watched just endless loops of videotape in which that's exactly what they're doing. You know, it's ludicrous for someone to say that. Let's just remember where the source of a lot of this misinformation comes from. The so-called Gaza Health Ministry is actually Hamas. They tell a story, usually false. They hand it off to maybe Al Jazeera. Mm-hmm. That's a Hamas-related entity. The next thing you know, they've told some NGO at the UN this false information, who then gives it to the UN, and the UN reports it, no one having checked it out, no one having verified the veracity of the information. Then all the news outlets say, oh, the UN today confirms that Brian Kilmeade is not the smartest man in the room. Well, we all knew that anyway, but now we have the UN as the source of it, and people are quoting the UN, but they're really quoting Hamas. That's where it all started.
So you do have proof. You're saying that Israel does have proof that Hamas is reselling the aid that you guys have put in there.
They absolutely do. And in fact, we watched in real time. There are drone cameras all over Gaza. There were steel cameras around that you could watch on the monitors in real time and see trucks getting looted. You could see gunmen getting up on top of the trucks that the UN was bringing in. Look, it's a mess down there. I'm not going to tell you it's a beautiful sight. It isn't. It's a war zone. But it is a war zone, and it is a mess for one reason, because of Hamas. And when President Trump made his statement yesterday and asked Steve Witkoff and me to go to Gaza and see firsthand and deliver for him a report, I can tell you the president gets it right when all of Europe is getting it wrong. President Trump said it's Hamas. And I want to make one quick point here. It's interesting to me that all the European nations are coming together. They're really helping Hamas by demanding a Palestinian state and condemning Israel. Hamas loves that. But do you know who's taken the other side against Hamas? All of the Arab Gulf states like the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Qataris. That ought to tell you something.
But I know, but they did include in that statement, Ambassador, they did include in their statement they wanted moving towards a two-state solution, which we know is farcical. I don't mean to brag, but we did have Secretary of State Marco Rubio on yesterday with this very question about the recognition of a two-state solution, which, by the way, I don't even know what it would look like on paper, let alone in real life. Cut 29. Yeah. We have allies, UK, Canada, and France, all either threatening to or already done recognizing a Palestinian state. That's over 140 in the UN. How does the U.S. view this move?
Irrelevant. It's irrelevant. I mean, it's annoying to some, but it's irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything. First of all, none of these countries have the ability to create a Palestinian state. There can be no Palestinian state unless Israel agrees to it. Number two, they can't even tell you where this Palestinian state is. They can't tell you who will govern it. And I think number three, it's counterproductive.
And that's your point. It's counterproductive. Is it true today, the Times of Israel is saying Israel is warning Hamas it will begin to annex parts of Gaza if they don't get a hostage deal reached. And we did see some hostage video of this young man, 21 years old, obviously looks like he's suffering. It looks like something from Auschwitz, horrendous. But your reaction to that report and Marco Rubio's statement?
So proud of the secretary. He's been spot on. When he talked about the fact this is sort of a just pipe dream when these European countries are out there demanding a Palestinian state, I've suggested, look, if France wants to create a Palestinian state, let them do it. Let them put it right there in the French Riviera. It's a nice piece of land. I'm sure people would like to come and go from Gaza and maybe from even Judea and Samaria and go to the French Riviera. So Macron is welcome to offer that if he likes. But you and I were talking back in January before I was sworn in to become ambassador here. And you asked me about a Palestinian state. I said, Brian, we've already had one. There is a Palestinian state. It's called Gaza. That was a absolutely 100% Palestinian state. How did that work out? That's what it will look like.
What about, so right now, there is no talks. Talks broke down about a week ago. So Steve Witkoff comes back. You guys tour Gaza. Now, the president of the United States says, you know, it's hard to fake starving. We know some of the there were some hoaxes. Sadly, there's some kid born with birth defects. It looks horrible, and they made it seem like that kid was starving. I get it. But you do see human suffering. You care about human beings. You're a pastor, Mike, for goodness sakes. You care about human beings first. So if Hamas won't come to the table, have you seen a workable plan? And if is there anything that could be done? For example, the Qataris, pressuring them even more severely, kicking out some of their the ones that are not in the war zone out of their country to get them to the table. Can you tell our audience the next step?
Well, the president, I think, had the best next step. He was very clear in saying there needs to be a concerted effort. Here's what ought to happen. The UN ought to join forces with GHF and start getting the food to the people and quit pretending that GHF is ineffective and quit pretending that they're doing a great job. They could work together. It would be helpful. The UN has lots of food. They just don't know how to get it in safely. And they don't like the method of delivery. And they seem to be more focused on how the food gets there than whether or not it even arrives. Well, that's not a hunger-centric issue. They need to take care of the people. Brian, there is suffering there, no doubt about it. But this idea that there is mass starvation on the level that you see on pictures is simply not accurate. One of the things I want to tell you, we talked to Gazans today. You know what they really want? They want the United States to stand with them, to help them have a future. They're sick of Hamas.
So have you been able to interact with any form of leadership with Palestinian leadership? I don't care if it's whether it's a group leader or anybody in the Palestinian Authority you might deem somewhat respectable.
I've been to Ramallah twice. I've sat down with not just a group of business leaders, but also with government leaders. I think that there is, look, there's deep philosophical disagreements about a two-state and certain things. But there is also a real desire to see peace and prosperity for the future. But when I sat down with Gazans today, many of these are well-educated people. You know what they want? They just want Hamas out of their lives. They want peace again. They want to build communities where their kids can grow up in safety. They're sick of Hamas. They're sick of the PLO. They're tired of having their lives destroyed by people who treat them as if they don't exist and they're not important.
They
love the United States. And this is what was fascinating to Steve Witkoff and me. They're grateful to President Trump for the things he's saying, for the things he's promising to do. And it was kind of a surprise to us to hear that these are not people that are saying, right, well, you know, we've been for Hamas, but we're not going to be so much anymore. They hate Hamas. They're ready for Hamas to disappear and never be seen again.
So, for example, if the mob took over my neighborhood, which happened in New York City for decades, you really tough to speak up against the mob because you got your hope your family's going to get wiped out. So Hamas is the mob. They're a terrorist mob, perhaps more ruthless, definitely more ruthless than you would find in the mob at its zenith here in New York City and different enclaves. Got it. So how many of them are left and what is it going to take to get to the next step? Have you seen a plan even on paper that would wipe them out, marginalize them, isolate them?
I think you're going to see that very soon, but it's the president's prerogative to release the details, and I expect that you're going to see that. When I say soon, I'm talking not months or weeks, but just in a very few days, where he will outline what he is going to instruct the United States to be a part of, and I think it's going to be celebrated in Gaza by the people who have suffered for 22 months under this absolutely vicious band of savages.
I know. For you personally, there's a story out there that everyone seems to run with, that Prime Minister Netanyahu is subjected to his extreme right. It's not really his policies, but if he doesn't do what the extreme right want him to do in Israel, then he's going to lose his power and he'll lose his base. Could you tell me what the reality is? I can't do inside politics in Israel.
Well, I live with it every day over here, and I can tell you that that's simply not the case. Does he have a right wing in his party and in his government? Of course he does. He also has a left wing. It's kind of like President Trump has to deal with all of the various people who are in the process. But here's the part, Brian, that is just not getting through, and people are not being honest. President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are closer than I think probably any two world leaders have been. And any attempt to say that they're not on the same page is not true. And President Trump has talked with almost daily the prime minister. And the prime minister is willing to make bold moves to get this all settled. Nobody wants it to be over more than he does, as well as every Israeli wants it to be over. So this notion that Israel wants to continue the war, that's one of the dumbest things I think I've ever heard in my life.
And I keep hearing it. I want you to hear what Richard Haass said from the Council of Foreign Relations. I want to see what your take is. Listen.
The president has political standing in Israel that even Bibi Netanyahu doesn't have. If the president wants to move the needle in Gaza, he can do it. He can put pressure on Israel, not by declaring a support for Palestinian state unconditionally, but by pushing the Israelis to come up with a day after plan to stop, to open up the air Gaza to food aid, to stop new settlements in the West Bank. There's a lot of things this president can do if he really...
So your thoughts. I just wanted to get you that take. We're up against a break, but what do you think?
Okay, I'll be real quick and just tell you, Richard Haass is absolutely off base. It is not the Israelis that need the pressure. It's Hamas. And he needs to come over, as Steve Witkoff and I did today. He needs to look and realize the problem, the total obstruction here is Hamas. Israel is doing its part. They're doing more than their part. Can you tell me in the history of the world any country that was told that they were responsible for feeding the people that murdered them?
Ambassador, the president's made a lot of great picks to put in a lot of good, important places, but I think you might be one of his finest. Ambassador Mike Huckabee, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
He did not take an easy assignment, believe me. He could be doing a lot of other things. When we come back, your turn, 1-866-408-7669. Also, we have another story I'll share with you when we return.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. When you visit the doctor, you probably hand over your insurance, your ID, and contact details. It's just one of the many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose it, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
A lot of Democrats want to turn the page on all of that and look forward. And so it's not going to be easy for her.
There's going to be a book tour. And one of the things that I talked to people who have been dealing with it with her is that she really struggled with what she was going to say about Joe Biden.
Democrats historically have not been interested in nominating again someone who ran, got the nomination, and failed.
I don't know if she should run again, but I definitely would like to see her write a book. I definitely would like to, you know, see her start a podcast and just build a real connection with people.
Listen, there's nobody I'd like to hear less from than Kamala Harris, because I don't think she has anything to say. When has she ever said anything of worth? She just tries to get through topics, smile and wave and giggle. And I don't think I've seen a more incompetent public figure rise higher. And now she's back to preview a book that's not going to be out till next month, which means you're going to start getting pre-sales going. But it's 170 days we live through that every Democrat resents and no Republican is curious about. Believe me, they don't want to go back. I mean, do you think that Tom Brady wants to go back and relive his giant Super Bowls? No. They want to focus on winning another with a brand new quarterback and a brand new coach. The Patriots did. I probably would have been a better example. That's them. I mean, they thought they were going to win. They didn't. They thought that Joe Biden was going to coast. He couldn't. They put Kamala Harris in, gave her $1 billion, and she failed, lost every battleground state. And now Joe Biden is speaking at some keynote speaker at some legal event. I think he got an award where he screamed inaudibly. And Kamala Harris tried to make sense with Stephen Colbert. Both of them are two talents that are finished and were overrated to begin with.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th, just blocks from how we began this week. And that was the horrible shooting that took place over on Park Avenue. We're in New York, where we probably have the whole country looking at our mayor's race because it's emblematic of what's happening with the Democratic Party. And most of these cities are dominated by Democrats. This hour, we're going to be joined by Sean Davis, CEO and co-founder of The Federalists. We just have job numbers in. They were below expectations, supposed to be 102,000 added, about 73,000 added. The market's not loving it so far. They're down significantly, 745 points. Julie Banderas at the bottom of the hour. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
For most of the media, this is not coverage. It would be a confession. That is, if they actually cover this story, they are confessing their own role
Pay attention. Revelations about the Russian hoax are accelerating and going in a direction that all media outlets will find it impossible to ignore. Hillary Clinton and George Soros are front and center. But now, an ultimate double cross. The New York Times stance is astounding, and I'll share it.
Number two.
We started tariffs. We didn't know what they're going to be, and now we kind of know, and they're more moderate and thoughtful and, you know, more carefully done, and hopefully they'll help some companies export. Maybe some people move manufacturing back here. So, you know, so far, so good.
That is Jamie Dimon. Trade deal deadlines yesterday, not for MLB. Yep. Oh, yeah, for MLB. But also for DJT to realign our trade relationships. Most of the bigger economies are done and we're on track outside Canada. Even China is on track for a big deal.
Number one.
I always believed that as fragile as our democracy is, our systems would be strong enough to defend our most fundamental principles. And I think right now that they're not as strong as they need to be.
Just drudgery. Kamala Harris is back and back on center stage, as is Joe Biden. And now Democrats and America is forced to relive their epic fail. We'll bring you the latest on yet another member of Joe's inner circle pretending he was fine and Joe could have won had the party let him fight. So just a couple of things about the economy. The market's down. I think a little bit on the uncertainty on some of the tariffs and how it's going to affect everything. Pharmaceutical prices are down, I think, for a really good reason. The president of the United States says we're being gouged by pharmaceutical prices. I am going to demand that these pharmaceutical companies lower their prices immediately, causing the pharmaceutical stocks to go down. And that's playing into it. The unemployment rate stays at 4.2%. We have collected $136 billion off tariffs already. And according to our Treasury Secretary, we'll get $300 billion off tariffs. But in the end, is it raising prices? We have not seen it. It depends on the product, but substantially have not seen it pervasively across our country. Sean Davis is CEO and co-founder of the Federalist, former economic policy advisor for Governor Rick Perry. Sean, welcome back. Your thoughts about the job numbers and its effect on the economy.
Yeah, I think the job numbers are interesting mainly because of their intersection with what's going on at the Fed. So we had Jerome Powell ahead of the election last year when the economic picture was a lot murkier, when inflation was a lot higher, cutting rates like crazy. And then now where we have inflation finally tamed, he says, no, it doesn't seem to warrant rate cuts. Well, I look at these jobs numbers, which were a lot lower than people were expecting, and I think, man, if now's not the time to cut, when is? Inflation is down low. We're starting to see some softness in the labor market. It's time to cut rates.
So we understand the job numbers have been revised down in May and June by 258,000. That's significant. I don't know how you're off by that much. But 73,000 this time instead of 101,000, which is a low expectation. Overall, what out of all this, being that you can't really say the word uncertainty for certain, because we've had these tariffs in place in some degree since April. And now that we have some major deals in place and some others who just got letters and some got extensions, why do you think the market's right now taking a beating?
Well, generally, markets function on new information. So if they had concerns a month ago, they're not going to be radically changing prices today because of stuff they were worried about a month ago. I think this morning is probably entirely a function of the jobs report.
Okay. Before the jobs report came out, it was down about 300. The one thing that I'm pretty amazed at is how these deals are coming in. The president kept his composure throughout of it, at least his team did. And one of the things that's happening is a lot of people are converted. We watch pedestrians of commentators like Bill Maher said, I was wrong. I thought the world was ending. And Jamie Dimon said this yesterday. By the way, he's had a series of meetings with President Trump. Cut 20.
We started tariffs. We didn't know what they're going to be. And now we kind of know. And they're more moderate and thoughtful and, you know, more carefully done. And hopefully they'll help some companies export. Maybe some people move manufacturing back here. So, you know, so far, so good.
That means more than just one banker, right, Jamie Dimon?
Yeah, he's kind of an emblem for really what I would consider the entire Wall Street class. And one thing we've been told for 20, 30, 40 years is the second you do tariffs, the second you try to equalize trade deals to make up for illegal subsidies from foreign countries dumping stuff here below cost, prices are going to skyrocket. And it turns out that may be true in a vacuum where, long-term prices are equaling the marginal cost of them. But we're finding that in reality, that's not actually true. And I was looking last week at the import price numbers coming in. And I think year over year, at least as of June, import prices were down, which is the opposite of what you would expect if you were out there saying tariffs were going to destroy prices and drive up inflation and make everything unaffordable, because it's just not happened.
Sean, for an outsider that's still trying to understand crypto and the impact of AI, we're watching a president in two of the last 3 weeks go ahead and set guardrails up and limit and set a really a course for crypto instead of trying to push it back and contain it. Same thing with AI. We got to beat China and we got to get these companies to do it. And I'm going to help you with the infrastructure of energy. How do you see I look at that as potential revenue streams into our economy that was unexpected, almost like the tariffs. Do you see a lot of forward-looking, futuristic planning here?
I think definitely on AI. I'll unfortunately have to plead the fifth on crypto because I honestly am just not smart enough to understand that whole sector. But I think on AI, it is important because you think about how embedded that is eventually going to be in the economy. It's going to control so many things. And I think it's good, rather than trying to fight it or say we need to kill it in the crib, which I think is unrealistic, we need to be looking at ways as a country to make sure that we're running the AI fight, similar to how we won the Cold War through our weapons buildup. AI is a weapon, both economic and military, and we need to make sure that our AI is the best, which I think means, I come from a journalistic background, making sure that AI is trained on actual real-world factual information and not a bunch of left-wing slop that it finds on the internet so that it can go and censor people based on lies it's getting off of Wikipedia or Reddit.
So it's interesting that Mexico got a big extension. And I think a lot of their extension on their trade negotiations has to do with I believe it's complex. But most of all, I think President Trump is really appreciative of the legitimate clampdown on the border, on their southern border and on ours, as well as I think we're working in tandem with them on the cartels. I wouldn't know that for sure, nor should they tell me. It'll only hurt their operation. But in terms of Canada, almost no progress. In fact, both sides seem to be digging in. So we put 35% tariffs on Canada. What products are going to be affected?
Yeah, so the big thing from Canada, and the example I always use, is timber. So Canada, they've got a lot of lumber. We have a lot of lumber. But what they did over a 20, 30-year period of time is they started subsidizing a bunch of this lumber that they were sending into the U.S. And over time, what that did, because we couldn't compete with their subsidized cost, it ended up sapping us of lumber mill production. And so even though we had the trees and we might have had the harvesting capacity, we lost the ability to mill our own lumber. And then when you do that over a long period of time, you end up with a country or a company having a monopoly, at which point they can jack up prices. So I think that's one example. But look, the fact of the matter for Canada is they are way more dependent upon us for their economy than we are for them.
So what are they thinking, Sean? What are they thinking? This is an accountant. This is guys an economist. Usually those guys can get the emotion out of it and just say, hey, let's start fresh. But it's not happening.
The only thing I can think is that they're assuming this brinkmanship will eventually get Trump to break before they do. And again, that's a really risky bet when you are far more dependent upon the guy you're negotiating with than vice versa.
So let's talk about China. Here's the Treasury Secretary. After, three rounds of negotiations, I'm amazed that out of the last 15 years, this is the calmest our relationships, not good or bad, but the calmest our relationships have been. Listen to the Treasury Secretary, cut 18.
Ambassador Greer and myself will be speaking to President Trump today about whether we will be doing the role by the August 12th deadline. There are still a few technical details to be worked out on the Chinese side between us. I'm confident that it will be done, but it's not 100% done.
So the Chinese ministry, China looks forward to deepening dialogue and consultation with the U.S. to seek more mutually beneficial outcomes based on consensus reached during the Stockholm talks. I mean, this is the most civil. We've gone back and forth with them. The president's in deal mode. Your thoughts, projections. Are you comfortable with this?
Well, one thing I think that has really changed the dynamic is that the whole world knows who's in charge right now. The whole world knows that Donald Trump calls the shots, that he runs the administration, that it's his diplomacy that everyone's implementing. We've not had that for the past 4 years. And so any incentive that China might have had prior to now to get a deal done, I think was almost non-existent, because who's actually making the decisions? Who's the real power player? In this case, they know it's not a bunch of bureaucrats at the State Department or a bunch of NSC advisors at the White House. They know it's Donald Trump. So I hope we get a trade deal. I care a lot more about the substance of it than I do getting just a deal in name only, because China has been really working to hollow out our manufacturing economy for decades, and it's time for us to claw that back.
You know, it's interesting, and I think I'm not sure I'm going to get the terminology right, but for example, when we started hitting tariffing China, they said, fine. They started building factories in Indonesia and Thailand, and we're not going to fall for that anymore. Remember when we did the USMCA, they immediately started building factories in Mexico, and we're not going to fall for that. So we're clamping down on third-party manufacturing imports, and I think that neutralized their key strategy.
Oh, I think you're exactly right, and it's something that didn't get enough attention. When we would go and whack China, they would just say, okay, all this stuff that we made with factories using technology we stole from you when we encouraged you to come here, we're just going to send that to Vietnam or Laos, Cambodia, and then they'll just dump it at below cost price. And Trump got wise to that pretty quick and said, yeah, that's not happening. We understand these little games you're playing, and we're done with those.
I love it. Sean Davis, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And keep in mind, Sean's over in Texas. And I think about this. Think about how these border cities, how much better they're doing, and how often they're purple. And that's going to help with the election, along with redistricting in Texas. California's trying to do the same thing. But with Sean, is actually, they're actually going to get a wall soon. And I think that's going to be under construction. Really interesting. So we'll see where this goes when it comes to the economy, when these trade deals. The market is now was down 700. Now it's down 500. It could change quickly. I know Trump's not going to worry about it. He's got things on a path. This is in April. We're on a path. I would not be surprised. And I said this yesterday. But by the end of the week, by the end of the day, by the end of the weekend, late, India comes in. And the president's got to October 7th. He's going to put all this stuff in October 7th. There's a lot you can do in that gray area. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Julie Banderas at the bottom of the hour. We come back and I tell you about the latest nuances with the Russian hoax. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Look, I think that the president does not want to come to terms with the fact that the Russians hacked the election.
Russia hacked the election to tilt it to Mr. Trump. The question is, did Mr. Trump cooperate?
Unlike President Trump, he has no doubt the Russians hacked the election.
Mr. Trump is seeing more and more of the walls closing in on him, mm-hmm. which is why he is becoming increasingly desperate.
The presidency is effectively a Russian op. Right? You know, partisan warfare between Republicans and Democrats. This is international warfare against our country.
This is evidence of willingness to commit collusion.
Definitively, Russia hacked the election and Russia is doing it again now.
Okay, I'm reliving 2017, 2016. That's when all those cuts were from. Now we find out that Hillary Clinton did the dossier. Hillary Clinton launched the investment launch. The whole collusion, illusion, and she did it in order to get pressure off her because she was using an unsecured device with her email, sent it to her home server. I'm just reminding some of you, because you don't live it every day, John Podesta got his email hacked and it exposed the whole DNC, got Debbie Wasserman Schultz fired. As it was revealed, they conspired behind the scenes to make sure Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination. He wouldn't go away and was starting to beat Hillary Clinton. So they got rid of him, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz was exposed. And she gets fired. And then, of course, James Comey comes out and goes, this is horrendous. But even though the FBI is not supposed to decide on prosecution, I am deciding by the power invested in me, which you have none. I'm not going to prosecute her. You remember all this. Well, it turns out they made some discoveries and with this FBI, with Kash Patel and with Dan Bongino, and giving it over to the DNI and to Pam Bondi, that behind the scenes, there was a concerted effort to make it seem as if Donald Trump was colluding with Russia. But it wasn't incidental. It wasn't coincidental. It was deliberate. In a 24-page intelligence annex compiled from memos and emails obtained by the Obama administration in the lead-up to Election Day, these were confidential conversations between Debbie Wasserman Schultz, liberal billionaire George Soros's Open Society Foundation, and that Open Society even has a person, Julianne Smith, from was the brainchild of Julianne Smith of the Clinton campaign, so it's not like generic. So Julianne Smith found a person named Bernardo, who was dealing with Open Society because they needed some money and financing to push forward this Russian narrative, which destroyed the lives of Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, solitary confinement, got rid of Senator Sessions, made him a marginalized attorney general, ultimately got him fired. You know about all the problems. And think about this. They almost got Jared Kushner put in jail, and they did nothing wrong. 91-year-old Chuck Grassley saw this intelligence and said this yesterday, 23.
I think we need maximum transparency on all the schemes that were going on 10 years ago to either stop Trump from being elected or after he was elected to ruin his presidency. And that's what this Durham report is all about. It was all effort of total distraction and to make it look like Russia was playing a very major role in helping Trump to be elected. And now we know none of that was true.
Now, what I just told you, important. I hope you're able to stay with me. And if you can't, I'll go over it again when Julie comes in. But now there's a report in the New York Times that the information that we got with Hillary Clinton and all those emails, that's Russian disinformation. So I was talking to Matt Taibbi, who's going to be on with me Sunday at 10 doing this investigation, said BS. There's no way that's Russian disinformation. This is the emails of Hillary and the DNC being caught dead to rights.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Recently, I made the decision that I just, for now, I don't want to go back in the system. I think it's broken. I think it's, there are so many good people who are public servants, who do such good work. Teachers and firefighters and police officers and nurses and scientists. So it's not about them, but I believe, and I always believed, that as fragile as our democracy is, our systems would be strong enough to defend our most fundamental principles. And I think right now that they're not as strong as they need to be. And
I feel like every time she speaks, I feel like asking myself, what was the question? Because she never answers the question.
No.
She has no idea where she's going when she begins to talk. Once in a while, that happens to all of us. You go, okay, well, how do I buy some time to like really?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. She finally comes out and she gives a, are you playing that back for yourself?
I'm just playing the cackle. I was going to cue up the cackle because it's like, it's amazing.
So, yeah. So she was explaining a rationale for not running. You know her rationale for not running. She's going to run for president.
Yeah. Well, she knows that she's going to lose. I mean, I think that that's
no,
the
I don't
thing.
Think. She probably thinks she's going to win.
I don't know. I mean, I think that her advisors at one point just said, you know what? You need to take a break. Everyone wants to press pause on Kamala Harris, including Californians. You know it's bad when she drops out of a race in California. She wants to remain relevant. So I don't know if she's planning on ever running for president again, but she's basically saying in this interview that she's going to go around the country and talk to people about how they shouldn't lose their power. You know, she's lost her power. So what record does she have to go on?
So she says, I've been a public servant for so long, now I want to listen. Take your time. No rush. Here is what Democrats are saying about her coming back. And then Joe Biden had a big speech yesterday, too. Cut 8.
A lot of Democrats want to turn the page on all of that and look forward. And so it's not going to be easy for her.
There's going to be a book tour. And one of the things that I talked to people who have been dealing with it with her is that she really struggled with what she was going to say about Joe Biden.
Democrats historically have not been interested in nominating again someone who ran, got the nomination, and failed.
I don't know if she should run again, but I definitely would like to see her write a book. I definitely would like to, you know, see her start a podcast and just build a real connection with people.
So there's Julie Banderas is here. Julie, that was Charlemagne, Susan Page, another columnist named Isaac DeVore, and David Axelrod. So there's no appetite for her. I think she's like sixth if they did polling now. They have Newsom at first at 20, and there's Beshear and Westmore. Anybody associated with Joe Biden, let alone a vice president, how could they run?
Well, and not only that, but who is going to believe anything Kamala Harris said? Because Colbert actually brought up a point which would have actually given her an opportunity to sort of fess up to the Joe Biden cognitive cover-up. And he asked her about the debate.
You think Jay Tapper was a stretch? We would never
of
accept it from her.
Of course not. But still, the fact that she had an opportunity on national television to actually address the fact that there was a bit of a cover-up. And she could have actually gained herself some credibility when she was asked about that debate. And then he says, spoiler alert, it didn't go well. And that's when they decided that they needed to put you in the running for presidency. She should have said something. She should have addressed it, I think. I mean, it would have been an opportunity for her to actually
she's
be transparent.
She's talentless. And I
think she's also dishonest.
Right.
So she lives up to that name.
Yeah. So President Trump had an interesting take on her. She can't speak. She can't talk. She doesn't do interviews.
Yes.
So there, for example, this guy, Zoran Mandami.
Yeah.
I think he's dangerous.
Oh, he's awful.
But he can communicate. He is composed, understands social media. He can get himself around a question. Gavin Newsom is an actor. I put Gavin Newsom like a 4.
Oh, he's so annoying.
I put Kamala Harris talentless at 2. Unless she has a real personality that she is just so afraid to show, which she has to deal with her therapist on that. But I put Mamdani like Bill Clinton.
I mean,
slippery.
Yeah. I mean, most politicians should be able to talk. I mean, that's kind of what their jobs are, is to basically fill our heads with a bunch of BS. I mean, most of them are doing that. Mamdani, he's well-spoken. I still think he's a huge threat to New York City. And I unfortunately think that because somebody comes across as well-spoken doesn't necessarily make them the right choice, nor does it make them intelligent, nor does it make them rational. He's a communist, and he wants to turn New York City into communism. But that's neither here nor there. I think that Kamala Harris, quite frankly, watching her on that just reminds us of why we're so lucky and that we dodged that bullet, that she's not the president.
Well, not everybody feels like, who's the guy from Dumber and Dumber?
Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. Jeff Daniels. Didn't you say that she would have been a heroic? She'd been like a founding father as a woman. Here's Joe Biden yesterday. He gave a speech where he screamed his way through it. Cut 4.
Look, folks. We can't sugarcoat this. These are dark days. But you're all here for the same reason. I left that prestigious law firm and the public defender's office to go to the defender's office years ago. It's because our future is literally on the line. We must be unapologetic of fighting for the future. To paraphrase Frederick Douglass, there is no progress without struggle. And I would add, there is no progress without courage. None.
So does he understand that a lot of people are thrilled to death he's not there? They love the fact that his legacy is being dismantled?
Did you watch the video when he got lost on stage? Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, he got on stage and he got lost.
He was late.
Yeah. And then he got to the podium and he had no idea where he was going. And then he went back and then he was confused. He sat down. I mean, he was in a room full of lawyers. I'm sure they were all probably thanking, you know, their lucky stars that he wasn't elected. But and he did a good job at least at reading that script, because, you know, that was not off the top of his head. That was clearly pre-written for him.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, the other story that's taking place while this is happening is the investigation into the auto pen. Mm-hmm. And Tom Donilon, his chief confidant, who was telling him in the polls he's looking strong, when Nancy Pelosi turned around and says, put Tom on. What polls are you showing him? Like he's a child.
Yeah.
What he said, well, I'm doing fine in the polls. Talk to Tom. He goes, put him on. He goes, what polls are you looking at? So this guy was making, he already said if Biden had won, he would have made $8 million. He already had made $4 million. Mm-hmm. So why would you not cash in that gravy train, let alone, you know, patriotic thing to do would be to say he can't do it anymore. So while that happens, he's speaking, reinforcing why there's an investigation, and Kamala Harris is not running but queuing up for 28. So we'll see what goes on.
The softball questions last night, though, they, I mean, it was actually painful. I mean, not only did she completely gloss over the fact that he bombed in the debate, and that was the day that everybody in America realized we've been lied to for years. And I mean, Colbert, obviously, his show's been canceled, so he's canceled for a reason. He didn't ask one question. I mean, all of the questions were softball questions.
Right. So let's talk about something else that's going on, and that is Stephen Colbert. And the end of his show. And it's got to be the hardest one to get rid of would be The Tonight Show because of the legacy. There's actually, I think it's at Universal, you walk through The Tonight Show history. It's a history of television.
It is.
So it's hard to get rid of that institution. I hope they don't. But they're terrible. Stephen Colbert is awful. He's trying to blow up his show and go out like a martyr. It's no way he's lasting 10 months. Then you got Jimmy Kimmel getting a 1-4, which is for us, you get a 1-4 and you get canceled. But he has a network, which permeates 100% of the country. And then Gutfeld's getting a 3-4, 3-8. So whether it's a 10 or 11, he was killing them all. Jon Stewart weighed in on Gutfeld's success. Listen.
You know, they all talk about Gutfeld's the most popular. Yet he's not popular because he's a both sides guy. He's not, you know, a fair use like, you know, the fairness doctrine says. Like, he's relentless. And, you know, after a day of watching Fox News and being bathed in their very purposeful propaganda, it's a great way to top off the night. But it's not the Jay Leno, like,
I don't understand. I mean, why do you want to offend your audience? Why not just do a show about, you know, why do you have to talk about things you believe? Why do you have to make jokes about things you actually think? I'll just say, you know, I'm just going to go throw myself down a hill.
So that's Jon Stewart weighing in. Mm. What do you think?
Yeah, I think nobody wants to admit the fact that the country is getting sick and tired of this hardcore left woke messaging that's coming from Hollywood and all the late night talk shows. They're sick of it, you know? And where did it get them? You know, all these celebrities that backed Kamala Harris realized that they were backing a loser, and they're looking at their party, and not even one leader could she name in that interview. Who's the leader of the Democratic Party right now? Come up with someone. Oh no, I can't. I don't want to name names because God forbid, you know, I leave somebody out. That's what she said in the interview. I mean, everybody knows that the leader of the Democratic Party doesn't exist. I think they're probably still thinking Obama is the leader of the Democratic Party. That's out of touch they are.
All right. The other big story is Sydney Sweeney.
I love this story.
So tell me about, should we be insulted that she's advertising Eagle jeans and the word jeans is she says, I have great jeans?
First of all, this story is the most ridiculous excuse for the left to get angry. They're angry because a blonde with blue eyes was modeling jeans, which P.S. was happening in the 80s under Jordache jeans. When Calvin Klein came out and had Mark Wahlberg wearing tighty whities or Justin Bieber wearing tighty whities and in their tight bodies, they were not getting an outcry from the left. Oh my God, we're sexualizing men now, right? She's a model. And what do models do? They wear clothes. And are models supposed to be attractive? Yeah, historically they are. And by the way, American Eagle, and I just got to say this because there's been so many misnomers about this, which is so ridiculous. Nobody's talking about this. Number one, they have a size 24 jean. There are not many companies that make size 24 jeans, and they advertise for size 24
jeans. Is 24
big? It's not petite. I will tell you that.
Here is Robin Landa. She's insulted by this. Cut 48.
The con, good jeans, activates a troubling historical associations for this country. The American eugenics movement in its prime between like 1900 and 1940 weaponized the idea of good jeans just to justify white supremacists.
So that's what launched everything, as well as a whole bunch of people on TikTok saying how insulted they were. Because they're bigger women, or in terms what Lawrence Jones calls thicker women.
What's wrong with being attractive and thin? And by the way, it doesn't mean to say that if you're thicker, that you are not attractive. This is just a certain body type. But they advertise all different body types. And not only that, but what really bothers me and what most are not talking about is that a large proceeds of these jeans, she's selling them for $89 a piece, are going to victims of domestic violence. They're going to set up a hotline for people who are victims or survivors of domestic violence to call in, and that's where the proceeds are going to. Why is anybody talking about that? So she's actually standing up for women. And if it means selling her beauty in order to do so, to raise awareness for domestic violence, why not?
But weren't they using, wasn't the big push ever since George Floyd for some reason to get everybody has to be a minority that does a commercial.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to have some type of defect.
Well, and I love all of the memes and all the jokes about this on X. I mean, now you've got like people wearing denim jeans. They've got Beyonce, and it's just ridiculous. Everybody's making fun of it because it's clearly a joke. And the Dunkin' Donuts ad that just came out, you know, there's a guy that's talking about how he's got good genetics, and people are all angry about that. Dunkin' Donuts. Do you remember the Super Bowl commercial with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon? And his sidekick, and they're the Dung Kings. I mean, these commercials are comedic. They're funny. They're tongue-in-cheek. This was a play on words, on genes. Who gives a crap?
Here's some examples from social media. Cut 47.
Hey, American Eagle. Now do black and brown women. Because black and brown women also have great genes that they inherit from their parents. Did you know that?
Talking about blue jeans and white people, boycott American Eagle. Boycott the out of them.
A blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda.
There is this American Eagle statement, which I'm assuming is a joke that somebody put out, which is hilarious.
Well, what is it? Is it real
it
or
says,
a joke?
Do our producers know if this is real? We sincerely apologize for featuring Sydney Sweeney. It's probably a joke, but it goes on to say, we underestimated the combined impact of her blue eyes, blonde hair, and general hotness. Then it says, also, we did not realize how big her boobs would be. Our marketing team has been sent to denim sensitivity training. Thank you for your feedback. Please stop emailing
us. No, that's real. I don't think
no, it's not.
It is real.
Okay, it's the best thing I've read
ever.
Like ever. Like, please stop emailing us. We're sorry her boobs were so big. I mean, is that really real? Because I read it and I was like, okay, if this is real, that marketing person needs a massive promotion.
Well, a lot of times you book
hilarious.
A lot of times you book a model and you don't realize how big her chest is.
Right.
It happens to everybody.
I can imagine.
Right.
And then
you sit there and go, what do I do?
You're like,
do I blow up the whole shoot or do I take pictures anyway?
Right. Like, do we have to show this woman's boobs? I mean, that's probably not going to sell.
You know what's the worst? When they show up and they have a shape. And that leads to other pictures from other angles.
Yeah. But that's what people want to see. I'm not saying like you.
Right.
But I mean, I'm just saying. And first of all, like the other thing that's crazy about this commercial, she's not even wearing like skin tight jeans. I mean, yeah, you can see part of her cleavage, but she's actually walking around in baggy jeans with like modest jeans. Some of the past jean commercials, they look like they're painted on.
Well, and that, by the way, that's uncomfortable. We're not into that as a country anymore.
We were
at a point where the painted jeans had to be extremely tight.
You know, skinny jeans are no longer a thing. It took me like a year to adapt to that.
Let me ask you something. Skinny where? Skinny
like,
calves,
like
skinny
ankles and skinny thighs
and calves.
Like the whole thing basically is just like tight to your ankle.
Can you help me with
now
this?
Now it's wide leg and it's baggy.
Okay.
It took me a good year. I was still wearing skinny jeans and my friends are like, Julie, those were out like 3 years ago.
And they will tell you personally or will they text
message you?
Oh, they
tell me right to my face.
They will.
Yeah, including my kids. They're like the fashion police.
Isn't it the
house.
Worst when you're out and they're like, what are you wearing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm 1,000 miles from home.
Now I'm also you tell way me- older than you and I'm not going to adapt to fashion trends as quickly.
Yeah, even though they're probably right.
Yeah, they are 100% right.
What are mom jeans?
Mom jeans are the ones that come up over your belly button.
Okay. So it's the waist of the
which,
mom
by
jeans.
The way, mom jeans are back. The
don't
jeans
say are, that.
I hate to say it, but that's what the style is now. People are wearing these loose, baggy, wide leg jeans that come up above your stomach, which, by the way, is not a pretty look.
Like, I don't think so.
To elongate your torso from above your belly button to your crotch, can I say that?
Yes.
Is not attractive. It makes your ass look like it's freaking 5 feet long.
Right. The only way to fight it, untucked shirts. They cover up.
Okay.
Cover up the pelvis.
Yeah, I suppose. Then what's the point of having a high jean if you're untucking a shirt?
I think the whole point
is that they want the jeans up practically to their boobs.
There is no point.
Okay. It's like a jumper.
There was no point to anything we just spoke about.
No, there never is, Brian.
When do we see you on TV?
I'm going to be on Fox Noticias today. I mean, that's what I'm doing
today.
Oh,
okay. I thought you might be doing
Fox Deportes.
She speaks multiple languages.
I do. I speak a couple languages, yeah.
Don't brag.
I mean, it's not that I understand what's coming out of my mouth. I said I read a teleprompter.
I can read a teleprompter. Thanks so much. Julie Banderas, go get him.
Okay.
Breaking news. The latest headlines. Exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We are back. Just a quick mention on One Nation. I can't wait to all of you to watch at 10 o'clock on Sunday. It's going to be repeated, too, on Fox News Channel. Got Boris Johnson calling us from England to get a perspective on how the president was received overseas along with these trade deals. I'm also going to open up with Matt Taibbi on this whole Russia hoax and what they're being exposed to now and what we're finding out. That has Dan Bongino and Kash Patel saying this is worse than anybody thought, while the New York Times pushes back and says it's a conspiracy. We also have an interview with Jim Lampley, one of the finest sportscasters of the last 50 years, who's done just about every major event from the 1980 Miracle on Ice to going as a kid to Cassius Clay upsetting Sonny Liston. He's had a remarkable life. He's going to be with us, and Jimmy Failla is going to be joining us too, as well as John Castamatidis and Larry Kudlow together, bringing us inside this horrific shooting in New York and this mayor's race that's captured the country's attention. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's going to come to you from 40th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where yesterday torrential downpour Monday was the horrific shooting at 6:45 in the evening. And then we try to move through this week in which you have a bunch of different storylines, including this mayoral race has captured the country's attention and made Democrats have to run for the hills. They have no idea how to handle this crazy Marxist who is leading the pack by about double figures. Trace Gallagher at the bottom of the hour. Shannon Bream is standing by. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
For most of the media, this is not coverage. It would be a confession. That is, if they actually cover this story, they are confessing their own role.
Pay attention. Revelations about the Russia hoax are accelerating and going in a direction that maybe all media outlets will be forced to cover. However, the New York Times got an interesting take. The stuff that was found by Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, Russian disinformation.
Number two.
We started tariffs. We didn't know what they're going to be. And now we kind of know. And they're more moderate and thoughtful and, you know, more carefully done. And hopefully they'll help some companies export. Maybe some people move manufacturing back here. So, you know, so far, so good.
There you go. Trade deals deadline was yesterday. Jamie Dimon weighs in about the tariffs to date. DJT is realigning all our trade relationships. The ones that didn't come to realigned, he decides what tariff they'll pay in order to have access to our markets. What does it mean for the market? Well, we're down 540 points, but that has a lot to do with the job numbers.
Number one.
I always believed that as fragile as our democracy is, our systems would be strong enough to defend our most fundamental principles. And I think right now that they're not as strong as they need to be.
Really? Okay. Biden and Harris back on center stage, and Democrats are not happy. They have to relive their epic fail. Both have no charisma, and one is being studied to find out if he's even mentally there. Or if he has been for the last 4 years, I'm talking about Joe Biden, who was asked to go in front of the Bar Association and get an award. I don't know, for being a terrible president. Do you give trophies for that? Shannon Bream is anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News' chief legal correspondent. Shannon, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, Brian.
So first off, what about this take on the Russia hoax? We're finding out about this annex of 24 pages of Hillary Clinton interacting with George Soros's Open Society Foundation, Debbie Wasserman Schultz contacting the Hillary Clinton campaign. And now New York Times goes, yeah, that's Russian disinformation. What do you think?
Well, so interesting to me. And two, that you have this op-ed in the New York Times from John Brennan. and from James Clapper talking about, oh, this is all lies and propaganda and that kind of thing. But when you start to see documents, I think people should look at them and make an assessment for themselves. Now, we know that some of the information in this annex, they say, listen, it comes from Russian hacking, but it appears to be these emails back and forth between these outside groups like the Open Society Foundation and the Clinton campaign. And if these are legit emails, they're talking about not only the narrative that they're going to create and further, but this idea that, quote, the FBI will put some oil on it. I'm sure they meant gas on it in the future. Did they expect then that these intel agencies would pick up the baton from them and run with these stories that had no credible backing?
Well, one thing they needed was a compliant press, and they seem to have been stenographers for the so-called Russia hoax that didn't exist. Here's what Lindsey Graham said. Cut 25.
In January of 2016, Debbie Wasserman Schultz apparently meets with the Soros Foundation to talk about a plan to distract from the Clinton email scandal. And there's a statement where Obama said, I'm not going to have my president tarnished by the Clinton email scandal, suggesting to Comey and everybody else, you need to let this go. And at the same time, we now know from an email that Hillary Clinton, to distract from her own email scandal problems, set up the narrative that became Crossfire Hurricane.
So we're starting to unwind all this, mm-hmm. and Matt Taibbi and other people are trying to work this to move this forward. And they don't believe, the New York Times is interesting take. They're saying, well, what you're reading is salacious, but it's all Russian disinformation. The Russian disinformation that they said proved that Donald Trump colluded with Russia, now it's such disinformation that they say it's not authentic. But they're willing to believe what they got for 2 years, which, by the way, was totally engineered by the Clinton campaign. And that's been decided already.
Yeah, and that's what this annex raises questions about. Was the FBI either played by the campaign, if you look at these emails and this information that are alleged to come from these, you know, communications back and forth with people connected to the Clinton campaign, or were they in on it? That's the question that people are going to ask when they see this stuff, is that, you know, we were told that Hunter Biden's laptop was disinformation for months, for years, and come to find out there were intel agencies that knew at the time it was already legit and connected to, you know, cyber markers that connected to him. We knew that some of this stuff was legit. These intel agencies did. And you've got all of the people who signed on to this stuff publicly saying, like, oh, this is Russian disinformation, these former intel people, you know, 50 plus of them coming out and saying that. So you'll understand why there are skeptics in the American public when you start yelling Russian disinformation, when we found out nearly everything that we reported on about that Hunter Biden laptop was actually legit.
Yeah, meanwhile, Devin Nunes, we have the latest, but Devin Nunes was first when he was on the Intelligence Committee, and they were so angry at him, they tried to sideline him, suspended him. He eventually came back. Here's what he said last night. He works for Trump Media now. Cut 28.
Clearly, Durham had to investigate the source of that information, and so the source has to be verified. And this is not some low-level figure within the organization. It's one of the top players in that organization. But furthermore, I think there's something else that happened in the Biden administration. And that is, Laura, that why was that classified? Those were Durham's findings. Who was it that wouldn't let
that
information out? Why did Senator Grassley have to fight so long to get this out? I think what you're seeing here is this goes back to the last attorney general, Merrick Garland, and his deputy that wouldn't let Durham put this out.
So what do you think?
Yeah, there are a lot of questions about why we're just now seeing things that were, you know, so old. And I saw some reporting that Durham was a little bit worried about that annex getting out, looking like this whole thing was politicized while he was still conducting the investigation, that he wanted to keep going with some of what he was doing and whether that would tip people off. Maybe that was part of it. But, you know, last week, the stuff we got from DNI Gabbard, which was a 2020 report coming from the House Select Committee on Intelligence, that had all kinds of things that we suspected but we'd never seen before, where you've got senior CIA officials going to the director saying, hey, this Steele dossier has got several red flags. It does not meet our standards for tradecraft, and you shouldn't be including it. And Brennan replying, yes, but it rings true, doesn't it? And then going before Congress with our now colleague Trey Gowdy, who was a congressman then, and saying we didn't use it at all. It never factored in, whereas that report that just surfaced from 2020 clearly showed that it did factor in, and there were arguments with the director about not including it. It was in the assessment. It's in the annex to the assessment. So was he mistaken? Did he lie to Congress? You know, he said if people have questions, he'll come back and talk to them. And I hope Congress takes him up on that.
Yeah, I hope so, too, because we had to put these documents out there. But the one thing I wasn't counting on him saying the documents aren't real. So now you got to go authenticate that it came from her emails, her server. You know, the George Soros Foundation is denying this vehemently. OK, so get this woman out. She signed her name to it. This isn't George Soros.
I did think it was interesting that what the Soros Foundation said to me did not completely deny the existence or validity of the emails. There's some wiggle room in there saying the suggestion that we would, you know, collude with or trying to influence the FBI. I'm not going to get exactly right, but that's a crazy narrative. But I didn't see anywhere in there saying like those absolutely fake, you know, AI emails that we never created. I mean, I think that there was just a little bit of wiggle room in there about those.
So, Shannon, who's coming up on your show this week?
Well, Kevin has. So he's going to have to talk about the terrorists, but these really jarring, you know, jobs numbers, too, which the critics have said the economy's underpinnings are not good. You know, there's stuff coming that's not going to be good. So how do they digest this now and work this in after having a great GDP number and being able to point to other things? So we'll talk to him about that. We've also got Johnny Moore, the executive director of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. I've known Johnny for years, but there are a lot of critiques that they're the ones who are blocking aid from getting in. He says that's not true, that they will work with anybody, the UN or anyone else, to get this aid into Gaza. And he's anxious to do it and try to partner with them. So I want to walk through some of the critiques of the organization. Fact or fiction? We'll find out.
I can't wait. And our panel is?
Well, our panel, like you always ask me, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I know it's awesome.
Well, I know it's Guy Benson.
Yes, Guy Benson is definitely there for sure. I think maybe Juan Williams. Hold on a second, and I'll tell you for sure. Okay, here's the truth. It is going to be Guy Benson, Susan Page, Tiffany Smiley, and Dan Coe.
There you go. It's going to be an
exciting
show.
And who do you have on this weekend, Brian?
Oh, I got Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of the UK, Matt Taibbi to talk about this investigation.
Yes.
Jim Lampley, one of the finest sportscasters of my generation, maybe ever. He's a little older than me, from O.J. to Jack Nicholson.
And you and I are totally different generations. So
I understand that.
Not even sure who that is.
And Jimmy Fallon is, you've never met him. Oh, do you know him?
No, yeah. Know him and I love him.
I'm going to give him a big break and put him on.
Yeah, this could be it for him.
I hope so.
I feel good.
Absolutely. All right, go get him, Shannon Bream. We're going to watch Fox News Sunday everywhere, especially on Fox News Channel in the afternoon, 2 o'clock. All right, so when we come back, I'm going to be able to take your calls for the first time. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, Trace Gallagher comes in studio. We've dragged him 3,000 miles from his home in order to do a show here so we can fill in for John Roberts, who I was on with yesterday. Keep in mind, too, just a quick note, Fox Nation is going to be streaming my show August 23rd on stage, History, Liberty, and Laughs. If you love the country, want to hear great stories about the country as we come up on year 250, and want to have fun, it's the only show that combines both. BrianKilmeade.com.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. We got Trace Gallagher coming up at the second half of the hour. We also are looking at a couple other things that we're developing. It looks as though the administration's a little upset with how the market's reacting and some of the economic reviews of their tariff deal. It's down about 500 points. I think when things settle in and you see the India deal come in, this is going to start boomeranging again, maybe by the end of the day. The other big story that's taking place is what's happening with this New York mayor's race. And right now you have a situation where Zohran Mamdani, He's the Ugandan guy who just spent the last 2 weeks in Uganda, comes back. He's got a series of revelations about his background that are extremely disturbing to me, I think to you, but not evidently to the majority of New Yorkers who have him at around 40 or 50% approval. One he called Israel, as late as last year, in a forum, not a real country. Number two, he came out and still wants to disband the elite fighting force with the, who was the first on the scene after the Park Avenue shooting. He blasted that unit, and that unit, he praised this time, but he's blasted in the past. He says he's going to disband it, and no one doubts it. So yesterday, you had the mayor acting like a mayor. I think he might be the best shot anyone to dethrone him. But if they are smart, they're going to start playing these sound bites. These are not rumors. Sound bites for the constituency here in New York. And why does it matter outside New York? Because if AOC is able to anoint him become mayor, she's going to look like a power broker. AOC is trying to moderate her image, be a little less anti-Israel, and get away from the squad image. But don't let anybody kid you. She's a radical socialist who learned at the feet of Bernie Sanders. But I want you to hear Mondami. This is January of 2024. Talking about Israel. Israel, cut 38.
For so many people, Israel is not a place. It is not a country. It's an idea. And you see that in so many politicians' answers to the questions around Israel, is their answers were written 20, 30 years ago. They speak to a reality that does not exist.
Right.
They pledge fealty to the idea of a two-state solution, irrespective of the fact that a second state for Palestinians is physically impossible because it's not even a contiguous piece of land in this moment between where Palestinians live. So that all tells us that there is this disconnect. And what these resolutions, thankfully, they are, as you said, not binding, but they also, to me, speak of a fear amongst political class across this country of a discourse that is rising that seeks to question this convention.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of things. I agree on one thing. These states are not contiguous and not touching. One of the Oslo proposals was a huge bridge between the West Bank and Gaza. Number two, the Palestinian Authority basically doesn't exist. A lot of them were massacred by Hamas. They're in control of the terrorist organization. What he's saying is Israel shouldn't exist. He's saying, I'm against a two-state solution, just like Hamas, because Hamas wants Israel. They don't want a part of Jerusalem. They don't want a part of the West Bank. They don't want Gaza. They want all of it. And they don't care about this life. They're willing to kill themselves in order to do it. Think about the Sinwars that have been killed. All the higher-ups have been destroyed. They don't care. That's Hamas. Here's more from Mondami. This genius talks about what he's proudest of as an assemblyman. Now think about where the country is and think about this. Cut 37.
When I think of the greatest victories in Albany's this year, I think of the Excluded Workers Fund, a fund that was created for undocumented workers who were locked out of unemployment at the federal level and at the state level. And what this fund would do is provide some modicum of relief. And this fund was won in many ways because of the pressure brought by those that the state doesn't even recognize, the state doesn't even see. Without the pressure from those individuals, members of the state would never have taken this action.
See, he's proud of taking your money, taxpayer money, and giving it to legal immigrants for unemployment insurance. Do you have a brain in your head? Do you just not care about the country? If you're giving people free housing, free food, and then paid not to work, who is not going to come to this country? Nobody. That's the guy that could be in charge. And for people to say the mayor doesn't have that much power, we watched a mayor be able to slow walk academies when it comes to getting more cops on the streets. We watched them disband the homeless unit, the anti-crime unit. We watched them take billions of dollars. This would be $1 billion, but and put into social workers. This guy wants to do exactly that. He wants to freeze rents and just drive landlords out of business. He wants to get his supermarket for the city, five of them, at least one in each borough, so people can shop for other people that want to have nonprofits. It's been failed epically in Philadelphia, Kansas City, Chicago. This is what he's proposing. But because he could put two or three sentences together, because he's young and understands social media, he's out in front. There is a mayor running, he doesn't have any the charisma this guy has, from Somalia, running for the Minneapolis mayor. He's likely to get the Democratic nomination, which means he'll go through. Then there's a Senate candidate over in Michigan. There was one up in Arizona. This is not going to be a small trend. This is going to be a big trend if this guy isn't stopped here. And it's going to take a massive comeback, whether it's Cuomo, Curtis Sliwa, moved a solid third now in the list, the only Republican. Cuomo second, but he's about 11 points off. We'll see if Eric Adams is going to get traction. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The president has waited over 6 months now and given the best efforts possible. We continue to engage with the Russian side as early as this week. Early this week on Monday or Tuesday, we had a whole conversation with them as well, not with Putin, but with some of Putin's top people in hopes of arriving at some understanding on a path forward that would lead to peace. And we've not seen any progress on that. And I think what bothers the president the most is he has these great phone calls where everyone sort of claims, yeah, we'd like to see this end if we could find a way forward. And then he turns on the news and another city's been bombed, including those far from the front lines. So at some point, he's got to make a decision here about, how much to continue to engage in an effort to do ceasefires if one of the two sides is not interested in one.
And that is Marco Rubio, of course, on with us yesterday as Secretary of State, talking about where we go now from Russia. Inside 10 days is going to be Russia's deadline to get to the peace table and have a ceasefire. I don't think they're close to doing it. It's going to be an interesting standoff because President Trump doubled and tripled down yesterday. And he said, this guy's really disappointed me. I don't think I'm going to talk to him again. I'm not sure sanctions will work, but they're coming. Trace Gallagher is getting set to host Fox News at night in a few hours. And in about 2 hours, filling in for John Roberts.
Right.
Trace, welcome back.
Brian, great to be back with you again.
So many deadlines.
Yeah.
I mean, China, August 12th, 10 days instead of 50 for Trump and Russia. Where do you think this is going?
Nowhere. I mean, I don't think Putin has any interest. I mean, you see the former president, Medvedev, issuing these inflammatory comments. So it's not just Putin not doing anything. It's they're trying to stir this thing up. And so you have Medvedev who's saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, these threats by Trump that he's going to institute these sanctions against our allies and they're going to, crank up. You want to buy fuel from Russia, we're going to crank up the tariffs. You want to buy this from Russia, we're going to crank up the tariffs. And he's saying that's not just a threat for the economy of Russia. That's a war threat. So what Medvedev is saying is that Trump is on the precipice of creating a war with Russia, not just solving the war with Ukraine and Russia, but creating its own war. That's inflammatory.
Here's what Rubio said about Medvedev, because I read that back to him, cut 40.
Well, you can't ignore anything someone's saying, and you always wonder, is that approved as but he basically is not a relevant player in Russian politics. He's not a decision maker. He's not in any of the meetings or conversations we've ever had. If you recall, he was the president there for about 4 years during the time when Putin didn't run again, and then he came back, so he was a placeholder. So I wouldn't call him a relevant decision maker. But by the same token, obviously he's someone who once held office there and is still in a role and in government. And, his words are going to have impact in terms of being a provocateur and things of that nature. But so I think I'm not sure he's speaking for the official Russian position, but he's certainly someone in an official position in Russia who's saying things that, are inflammatory.
So, and I think Rubio's right. He's probably not relevant there, and maybe he's not speaking in an official capacity, but he keeps speaking, and he keeps saying these incendiary things, and nobody's telling him to shut up. So that's the whole point here, is that if they wanted him to close his mouth, Putin would say, close your mouth. Instead, he keeps saying this stuff, so somebody somewhere is giving him the green light.
Right, so we'll see where this goes, because I guess secondary sanctions would be the next thing, but here you are, Trace, in sensitive negotiations with China.
Yeah.
Are you going to say, oh, by the way, we're in a backstretch here, but I'm giving you 100% sanctions on all the oil you're buying from Russia.
Right.
The answer would be yes. But I'm not sure the president wants to do that.
I don't think so either. I mean, I don't think he really does want to do that. But, you know, it becomes kind of this thing where he's in a quandary. So he has been saying for months that Putin or years that Putin is, you know, he has a good relationship with Putin. They talk well. They have these great conversations. And then Putin, it looks like Putin's just kind of playing him. And Trump knows that. So he's like, well, you know, screw this guy. This is not going to happen. So at some point, whether it involves China, whether it hurts the negotiations with China, at some point, he has to say enough is enough. And he has to put these things in place.
Well, I mean, when President Trump first took over, he said, I'm going to be friends with Putin. Why do I have to be enemies with everybody? It's good to be friends. And they had that play. They said it plays into the Russian hoax theme. Why are you so nice to him? I guess he has something over you. At the same time, Hillary Clinton is brewing this hoax situation where it's going to not only show Russia's infiltrating our elections, but it's in collusion with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That all plays into it. It's almost the same way they're doing with the Epstein thing. The president's not running from the story because he's not guilty.
Right.
But he wants it to end just like he wanted the Russia thing to end. Where do you think the hoax story is going?
Well, I mean, I think it's going in the same place that the last one was going, where it's going against the Democrats. And I think now a lot of this is coming out where even some Democrats who were skeptical are like, oh, no. We've known for years and years and years that Russia has been trying to influence American elections. That's not the issue. You're missing the entire issue. The issue is that the Hillary Clinton campaign, along with the FBI, these documents show, used this dossier to actually smear Donald Trump as a Russian asset. That's the point of this. It has nothing to do with Russia influencing or not influencing our elections. It has everything to do with Hillary Clinton and her campaign and this dossier. And today, you read in the New York Times and you read in the Washington Post, the first time they've really kind of brought this up, that they're knocking this down by saying, we've known forever about Russia trying to influence American elections. That's not the subject. The subject is that they changed the intel, and before they came out with a final intel conclusion, they leaked their conclusion to the media. As soon as Obama said change it, they not only started changing it, but right away they leaked it to the media, because the next day after this meeting in the White House, you have these stories in the New York Times and the Washington Post. They went on to win a Pulitzer Prize for it, for Russian collusion. So somebody leaked this stuff before they came up with a final conclusion. And moreover, that you have these new documents that show the FBI used the Steele dossier and didn't attribute it, didn't say this is a Democratic, this is a hit piece from the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
Paid for by Clinton. They didn't declare that. And that's where this whole thing gets very sketchy.
And John Brennan told Trey Gowdy directly, I didn't use it. We didn't use it for the intelligence operation. So that is a lie, or to get the clearance from the FISA court. So this is the headline. Get your head around this. Clinton's emails were likely Russian disinformation. So the whole communication between George Soros's Open Society Foundation and Clinton's people and her staffer who came up with the idea, that's Russian disinformation.
Right.
So they're trying to wrap this around. So do you, as Kash Patel, you're being challenged now. So you and they go, Kash Patel, who's always had theories and hyperbole and thought of conspiracy. Now, does he have to go out and go find the forensics to show it's actually Hillary's emails?
Right. And that's the whole point, is when you read The Washington Post and you read The New York Times and they keep saying, oh, no, and they keep knocking it down. And then you read the comments and all the people are commenting saying, what about Epstein? What about Epstein? Oh, here we go. We're trying to just kind of it's deceptive. They're trying to get away from Epstein, and they won't deal with the actual issue because The New York Times won't let them deal with the issue because they keep saying that, like they did about the laptop. Oh, it looks like Russian misinformation, disinformation, and so on and so forth. And they're missing the entire point of it.
So, Trace, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that the Epstein thing eventually will be just as empty as the Russia hoax.
Yeah.
Because you can run that into the ground. President Trump hasn't been around that guy 15 years, 10 years, 12 years before he died. So you're going to run that down thinking you got him. Do you know what's going to happen? You're going to have the midterm elections. You think the Republicans are vulnerable because of the big, beautiful law.
Yeah.
And you're not going to talk about it. Well, I watched 30 minutes. I wanted to torture myself of primetime, 30 minutes of every primetime show until they were done with it on CNN. And the first 30 minutes were all Epstein. All Epstein.
Right, because they think they're onto something.
They think they're onto something, but it's a story right. that's dead that you had no interest in. You just had a president that was trying to put the former guy in jail, and you don't think this would have come up? I'll wheel out Stormy Daniels, but not Jeffrey Epstein? Yep. Here's what Jonathan Turley said. Cut 24.
When you see the reaction of the media today, it's clear that no matter what is produced, you can show a dozen heads in a duffel bag, and they're still not impressed. And the reason is that for most of the media, this is not coverage. It would be a confession. That is, if they actually cover this story, they are confessing their own role in what may be the greatest political hit job in history.
He doesn't really speak like that, as you know.
No. No, I mean, he's always very
measured.
Even. And the whole problem here is that the media knows they're complicit. And if they jump on board with this, if they covered this honestly, they would have to come out and say, okay, well, now we have some explaining to do. They're not about to do that. You talk about the Epstein thing. CNN's editorial committee sounds like the Democratic Party's editorial committee, which is they look at social media. They look at the top 1,000 people on social media, and they make their editorial decisions like that. They hear a lot of comments about Epstein. Oh, Epstein's got to be hot. But if you overlook, you look at the total picture, it's not hot. It's not hot. It's the same thing. You have Joe Biden and Kamala Harris coming out last night. They come out publicly, and the Democratic Party is like, Joe Biden, oh, you know, it's a threat to democracy. Oh, the Supreme Court is coming. Oh, the district courts are great, but the Supreme Court is terrible. And we're in very dark days now, and you think, oh, my God, the Democratic Party really thinks that their only asset is to hate Trump. We will stipulate in court that you hate Trump. How about you come up with something that's going to help people? I know you hate. How about you help somebody? How about you bring Kamala out and Joe Biden out and explain how you are going to help people going forward? Which, by the way, Biden looked terrible last night, but that's
yeah, I mean, isn't he dealing with cancer situation now? I mean, does anyone even talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's bad. I really do. I think it's one of those things where he looked confused. He looked like you would think he would look at least rested and ready, and he would be prepared for this speech. And I think he looked haggard. He just looked like he was still the president. They were working him off. It's just he looks terrible.
I'm telling you, my family would not let me go out. If I was right. dealing with cancer, confused all the time. Did you see when they introduced him? He was nowhere to be found
right.
for about 2 minutes.
Right. And that's the whole thing is they're like, this is a guy who just looks lost. I don't know what his exact health problems are, but when you have his former aides going in, except the ones who pled the fifth, you have his aides going in before Congress, and now you can see that the narrative is not like, no, we're not going to say anything. The narrative now is, oh, yeah, I mean, we all knew Joe Biden was getting older, but boy, beyond that, he was perfect. So it's you know, admit to the obvious and deny anything that goes deeper. That's
right.
The status.
Here's a little of what Chris is talking about. Cut two.
I'm proud I've appointed judges doing their best to be independent, fair, and impartial. Respecting the rule of law and upholding the Constitution. I wish I could say the same for the executive branch, who seems to be doing his best to dismantle the Constitution. Well, I'm being deadly earnest, man. Which seems to be what's going on.
He said he's trying to dismantle everything we did. Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, and but remember, the district judges are doing exactly what they should be doing. They are great. I mean, give a big applause for the district judges around the country shutting down the president's agenda. The Supreme Court coming out and knocking those districts. Oh, come on. You kidding me? That's crazy talk. You can't do that. Look at the decisions they've made. He's like, have you seen the decisions? And then it comes out and he gives the Trump the dark days. And then you think you have not learned anything. You are the former president. You're not running for everything. You got nothing to lose. Get off the talking points and tell us how you feel. Tell us exactly what the Democratic Party needs to do to get better, because they're not getting better.
West Coast perspective now. Kamala Harris, how she viewed in local papers, did she not run because she knew she wouldn't win?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the bottom line is even the California machine is like she's just not really a very good candidate. I mean, you look at the Emerson poll, the new Emerson poll, which had her right after the election at 37%. She was the number one candidate. If they were going to hold a new election or a new campaign, it was Kamala. We got to slide her back in there. This time she'll win. Now, 6 months later, she's running at 13%. She's 3 points behind. Are you ready? Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg is leading the Emerson poll with Gavin Newsom, the current governor of California, 1 point behind her. And guess who's bringing up the rear? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's who they believe are the Democratic stars going forward. And you're like, okay, if that's what you think. But in California, people are like, nope, no shot. In fact, you have candidates in California who 6 months ago said, if Kamala Harris runs for governor, I'm out. And then 2 months ago, they said, if Kamala Harris runs for governor, I'm definitely in. These are Democrats saying I'm definitely in because she doesn't stand a chance of winning. And they're right. Kamala Harris knew she didn't stand a chance. And so I think she might be kind of testing the waters for a 2028 run. But she's faded. She's done. And I think we've seen the last of Kamala
Harris. And I think that any politician who had aspirations for running the state would have shown up during the riots, would have shown up during the fires. And she's done nothing.
No.
And the thing is, if you do want to run the state and you think you could stay home, then you know what a terrible governor she would be.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing is you have...
So who's left? Rick Caruso?
Rick Caruso is thinking really more about being the mayor of Los Angeles than he is the governor of California.
Against Bass again?
Yeah. I mean, I think... And listen, her numbers are horrific. So I think Rick Caruso, people are like, listen, he's running as a Democrat. He's really a Republican, but he has to run as a Democrat in California because nobody elects Republicans in that state anymore. I mean, at least they didn't. So that's kind of his thinking. But Karen Bass is no longer effective, and people realize she's no longer effective. And that's what's really, you know, that's what's generating Rick Caruso. And quite frankly, in a lot of instances, you have this scenario where Caruso becomes the mayor of Los Angeles and wields a great deal of power over the state of California because it's a big position. It's kind of the same as New York. You got a lot of focus on the mayor of New York City. You don't have a lot of focus on the governor. The governor's up in the wilderness, right? Up in Albany, up in the wilderness. And you have the mayor who's in the heat of things, yeah. Kind of the same in California.
All right, cool. Trace Gallagher, who are we going to see on your show?
Boy, that's a lot of hours away, Ron.
No, I'm talking about with John Robb. Sean, do you feel for John Robb?
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk a lot about this Kamala Harris, Joe Biden stuff. We're going to talk a lot about the dossier and why it was
Russia
never
hoax.
The Russia hoax. We've got a lot of this stuff going on. So
and great guests. That's all you
and
need.
We got great guests. And we got, you know, Sandra Smith's going to be there. And, that's, you know, it's going
to
be good.
1 to 3.
1 to 3.
And I'll Fox News at night, whenever Gutfeld's done, I say 11 o'clock. Thanks, Trace.
Thank you, Brian.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mission. Mission's full power and liftoff. Go Falcon, go NASA, go Crew 11.
Together we rise as NASA's SpaceX Crew 11 heads up to the International Space Station.
Vehicle is pitching downrange.
And we'll soon join Expedition 73 aboard the orbiting laboratory. So far, getting good call-outs on that first stage performance.
There you go. And so liftoff for SpaceX. They're trying to get to the moon. Sean Duffy's new mission, get to the moon, make it, tell everybody about it, make it a race. Because they're concerned that China's going to get there and claim it, and you can. And guess what's on the moon? I think this is probably a better term for it, but... rare earth.
Not this one. They're not going to the moon for.
Well, I know they're not going to the moon for this one, but the goal is to get to the moon. That's going to be the focus. And he wanted attention on this liftoff, but it was canceled yesterday because of a cloud. Listen, thanks so much for listening to the show all week long. Also, keep it here. And keep this in mind, too. BrianKilmeade.com. See me on the stage 23rd and September 27th.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.